Today's Teisho will be on case 51 in the Book of Serenity, Theon's Boat or Land. Introduction. In mundane truth, how many people have been enlightened? In Buddhist truth, how many people have been deluded? If they suddenly become one, can you then define delusion or enlightenment? Case. Theon asked Elder Zhao, "Did you come by boat or by land?" Zhao said, "By boat." Theon said, "Where is the boat?" Zhao said, "The boat is on the river." After Zhao had withdrawn, Theon turned and asked a monk standing by, "You tell me, did that monk just now have eyes or not?" Verse, water doesn't wash water. Gold isn't changed for gold. Finding a horse without knowing its color, enjoy the lute without the strings, tying knots, drawing trigrams, when there are such things, completely lost is the true pure mind of original humans. Today is the second day of our May-June session, and I want to thank everybody for doing such an excellent job this morning. Now, everybody here is pretty experienced, and the people who are here are really like the hardcore people, people who are coming for 7 days and who are deeply committed to this kind of practice. And so, needless to say, the sitting was really excellent in the Zendo this morning. Everybody's doing a wonderful job. And last night also, with your koans, everybody's doing an excellent job. It's really wonderful to practice like this. The truth is that for a long time people can't really comfortably do 7 days. I think in a few cases people told me they were going to do 7 days and they backed out. I think they just, they may even have done it before, but they just thought, I don't know if I can do that right now. I think a number of people were originally planning to come for 7 and are now coming for 5. And that's very, I'm very glad they're coming, and I think that's appropriate. You know, my feeling is that it takes a long time, for many people anyway, before 7 days is a really meaningful experience. In our group in Seattle, we had a lot of 5 and 6 day retreats for a long time, and that worked very well. I think when I first started doing Zen practice, I had a lot of pain in my legs, and Sesshin was a real challenge for me. And even though I felt very purified at the end of the day, each day was like every sit was a struggle. And, you know, I would have pretty much discomfort in every sit. And when I would wasn't sitting on the cushion, I was on my bed sleeping, trying to get enough energy to go on to the next sit. So I think under those circumstances, another couple of days wouldn't have been productive. You know, I just think probably many people, maybe myself included at the time, wouldn't have come to a 7 day sit, sesshin. And so 5, 6 days, that was really perfect for our group. And it gave me a lot of insight. Years later, we started sitting, a sitting group at the university, and I started having a sesshin at my house in Plainfield. I tried to do a 7-day sesshin too soon, and it was not a big success. In fact, one person actually came into the Dokusan room on the night of day 5 and made up a story. The person must have been so embarrassed. He made up a story about how he had to leave and hadn't told me. And I could easily see myself doing the same thing under those circumstances. So I think that it's remarkable in the modern world that people come to do sesshin at all. You know, given the values of the modern world, it takes a certain kind of person to understand the nature of Zen practice. You know, we get we send out flyers in our group, as you well know. We give out flyers at the activities fair every fall at the university. And Imtiaz, Kriti, and a number of other people over the years have participated. And Jaru did it. We probably give away, I don't know, we give 400 flyers away. And then I advertise in the Targum. I put a nice ad with a calligraphy that says Tsok Chan. It says Zazen. And it's beautiful calligraphy. I can't remember who did it right now, but it's quite old. And it's so beautifully done that it's arresting. When people open the Targum and there it is, it's just stunning. Those two characters. And so we get at the beginning of the semester, as you know, we get a packed house on a Friday night. We might have 30 some people. And people come in and they try it. And then some people come back a second or third time. And then they begin to fall off because you know, there's just nothing like this in our culture. You know, this idea of cultivating yourself is not part of the culture in general. You know, our culture is really based upon a competition for rewards. That's really the basic value system, is competition for rewards, status, and wealth. And this idea of cultivating the self, it just doesn't really seem to make much sense to a lot of people, or at least they don't know what it's about. You know, they come and they're sort of, they sit a couple times and it's not quite what they probably expected, because the results are not dramatic and it clearly requires some effort. So, you know, people go away. A lot of people just go away, and a small number of people continue to practice. And some of those people practice in a way that brings them to sesshin, and some of them don't. There's a young man who has been coming to sit for almost, I guess, 3 or 4 years now. And he came to one sesshin and never came to another one, but he does come to sit. You know, he'll be there once a week. He comes to sit, and he'll talk to me briefly about his practice. Somehow doesn't want to make that level of engagement. You know? So I just think it's interesting. We get a lot of people who are intrigued by Zen, and then a smaller number continue to practice, and out of those, a smaller number wind up doing sesshin on a regular basis. And I don't know why that is. I don't think it's a problem. I don't think that everybody is cut out for this kind of a life. But I just think sesshin is the most wonderful thing in the world. This opportunity to experience life in a very different way from ordinary consciousness. And I think it's wonderful. And all of you have been practicing for many years now, and here you are on a 7-day session. That's a real achievement. You know, the people who practice Zen are a relatively small number. People who go to Sesshin are a subset of that. And the people who come for 7 days, that's an even smaller group. You know, that takes a lot of persistence. So as I say, I don't think anybody who is unready for a 7-day sit should come. I really think that's a big mistake. I think there has to be a kind of ripening. You know, and maybe that's true all along, you know, at each stage. You know, I think people who come to do Zazen stick if they have a certain kind of maturity. You know, if they begin to feel dissatisfied with ordinary reality, so-called, you know, Zen might speak to them. You know, you have to have a kind of dissatisfaction in order to get into this at all. You know, something is just not right with ordinary consciousness. And I think some people at the university come to try it out. They're just looking for, you know, they're young and they're exploring options. And this is free and it looks interesting. Why not give it a whirl? But I don't think it's compelling for them yet, because they haven't been, they haven't yet had that, you know, people have this experience sometime in life where something hurts you, or you suddenly realize that so-called reality isn't really real, that it's not fair, or it's not just, or it's not true. And many people find this depressing. You know, a lot of people are depressed, I think, because they know that the values of our culture aren't real, and they're groping for something. Often they pick up anything they can find, and they feel that something's wrong with them, when in fact there's nothing wrong with them. They're actually becoming more mature, and so, you know, those kind of people might find Zazen interesting, and I think that you know, those people are the ones who tend to stick around. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think those are the kind of people who get interested in this. And then you know, some people have have an experience on the cushion of like losing the self, you know. Yesterday I talked about that woman who had been walking down a beach in New Jersey, down on the shore, had been walking on a beach at night, or I guess it was in Delaware. And she said it was like this magic moment, because it was like there was no time. It was like being in another dimension, you know. And I think that so that happens to people sometimes when they sit. You know, you sit on the cushion and you enter this other state of consciousness in which you know, self sort of disappears. You know, in the deeper states of mind, sort of self-consciousness just disappears, and we're caught up in like it's hard. It's like being in something, you know. Yesterday I was talking about how ordinary consciousness is always centered around like an audience, or it's like we're always aware of being watched. There's like a watcher in our heads who's watching us, and we're performing, we're being a self for that watcher. I have a friend who's a novelist. And I really do think he's always writing novels in his head. And I think he walks into a room and he's actually writing as he walks into the room, and he's a character in his novel. And he doesn't just walk into a room, he says, and then he walked into the room. And then he said hello, you know. So I think he's constructing a little story in his head all the time. And I think that's very typical. I think that people are constantly performing for a hidden watcher, you know, and trying to be real to that watcher. That's like ordinary consciousness. And the watcher is kind of an ambiguous figure, you know, it's made up of like parents, people we admire, things we've, you know, it's hard to say who the watcher is. I mean, maybe people constructed the idea of God in a way so that it's like the ultimate watcher. I mean, when I was growing up, I remember that, you know, in Sunday school, somebody once said that, you know, if you do a bad thing, God can still see you, you know. So maybe that's the watcher, but that's ordinary consciousness is like that. It's like you're watching yourself do things, and you're trying to do the right, you know, you're trying to be doing the right thing and so on, and you might be even narrating your little story. But when people begin to sit on the cushion, sometimes they have this experience where the watcher disappears. And it's like you're in something. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's really a wonderful feeling. You know, we call it samadhi. It's an alternate state of consciousness where there's the watcher is not present, and or so strongly present, and it's as though you're in the flow of things around you, you know. It's just things are unfolding, and you're not trying to control them. You're not trying to please anybody. You're just absorbed into the flow. And often in meditation, you know, we have very simple reality. Like at the university, we're in a dark room. There's very little noise. And you're watching your breath, and so the very little input, right? And you know, if you're in that state of samadhi, sometimes that your thoughts recede, and you begin to experience this flow. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's like things are going along, and you're just observing them, or you're. Yeah, things are going along and you're just going along with them, you know. I think that's what samadhi is, you know. And it people experience it as a release, as a real relief, right? It's so wonderful not to have the watcher consciousness, you know. It's so wonderful not to be constantly monitoring ourselves and trying to be somebody's ideal of what we should be. Including our own, you know. It's very hard for people to be natural like that, to have no watcher. But if you're really doing, I don't have to tell you this, but, you know, if you're really doing your Zen practice, there's no watcher present, and or less of a watcher. And there's a kind of natural flow, and there's not really like a center to it, right? There's really not like a center to all of this, you know. It's just flowing, right? Just flowing. And a lot of Zen practice is just learning how to maintain that kind of consciousness, and go with the flow. It sounds trivial, but that's a lot of Zen practice. You know, is just going with this flow and trusting in it, you know. Once we experience samadhi, it's so refreshing not to have that crippling watcher who's always judging, who's always, you know, we're always second-guessing ourselves, trying to do the right thing, say the right thing, be likable. And we're always, you know, down on ourselves. We're always, you know, policing ourselves. So it can come as a great release when you sit on the cushion and you're just in the flow. And it might take you a little time to get to that state, you know. And when you get there, you might not be able to preserve it because of some fear, you know, some karmic problem. So some lack of trust, let's say, you know. So this is really what makes koan training difficult, you know. Basically, all we're doing is observing the moments passing, coming and going, coming and going. And the koan is asking us to notice some aspect of the moment. Now, there's many dimensions to the moment, but the koan is asking us to notice some aspect of the moment. Yeah. And the problem is that you know, even though we have learned to get free of the watcher consciousness, you know, when we're afraid or frustrated or frightened or in pain, we tend to revert back to that consciousness. It's like there's a wonderful saying in psychology, it's called regression. You know, when people are psychologically assaulted, when something happens, sometimes they become like children again. You'll see this happen. You know, so I used to work for a boss who was, you know, when things would go wrong, he'd start whining. You know, this guy was like a 50-year-old man. He'd start whining and he'd get very, he'd get teary. And he would actually lash out at people like a little boy. It was amazing to see. But this person is now very high up in a certain institution that will go unnamed. But you know, when I first worked with him, he was so competent in other ways. But then, when he would get to the limits of his ability to hold things together, he would turn into like this a little boy and get very petulant, and he would lash out at people, especially women. And I think this is like going back to like when he was a little boy and giving mom a hard time. But this is regression, you know. Well, I think this happens to people when they do zazen too. We enjoy samadhi, the freedom of going with the flow, but then if something happens that we don't like, we tend to fall back into certain mental habits, or when we lose our bearings, we fall back, or when we're in pain, and so we can't be with the flow, you know. The watcher consciousness or the judging consciousness comes back into play, and it's very difficult then to notice the moment again, because we start projecting or imposing on what's happening some kind of a story that will make it make sense, you know. And then we can't really learn from the moment anymore. And you can spend a lot of time in that state. It's very frustrating. And a lot of the koans are, you know, involve confronting our karmic obstacles. So, you know, when you're given a koan, it's really a way of breaking through some of these obstacles. And the koan tends to elicit or point to elements of the moment that might be frightening or painful or difficult or hard to notice, and then we start regressing. We start to go back to the old consciousness and try to impose on the moment something that we think should be there. And this process goes on and on for a long time. But every once in a while, it becomes possible to dissolve our barriers and see the moment for what it really is, you know. And that's just really wonderful. That's what Zen practice is all about, you know. It's just being with the moment. And all of you are struggling with very advanced koans. Everybody here is doing a, you know, post-mu, in a few days, or actually this evening, everybody's going to be arriving, and And people, some of the people who are coming are coming for their first sesshin. Some of them are coming for their second sesshin. Some of them are, have done a number of sesshins. And a lot of them have, are still working on the mu koan. After you work with the mu koan, you've really learned how to connect with the flow, yeah, that energy, that pure energy of the moment. But then there are these obstacles that kick in. So I hope you won't be discouraged by any of this. You know, I just think that Zen is the most wonderful thing in the world. And you know, basically everybody here is making excellent progress. You're all doing an excellent job. And you just have to the trust, you know. And there's nothing you can really do. You can't make yourself trust, you know. The process builds trust, actually. The process of sesshin makes it possible to establish like a relationship of trust with the world. See, that's one of the most wonderful things about sesshin is that, you know, sooner or later, you sort of have to trust. It's just the way it is, you know. I don't know about you, but on day two of a sesshin, my legs hurt, you know. I'm tired, and, you know, I'm beginning to get a little bit worn down. And, you know, sitting on the cushion, is a challenge. You know, this morning for me, I don't know how it was for you, but it was a challenge, right? You know, I'm watching the breath, and even though I've been doing this for 30 years, just like everybody else, I have pain in my legs. And, I wish that weren't so, but it's the case, you know. And, like everybody else, I have an imaginary scenario for how things are going to go, and then they don't go that way. And like everybody else, I'm not intelligent about it. I keep trying to make things go my way. And you can spend a lot of time on the cushion like that, but assuming you don't leave the sesshin, you know, you come back and sit back down on the cushion, and you know, sooner or later you just wear yourself out, you know, you wear out your little self, and you just sort of give up, you know, okay, I give up. And at that point all kinds of things can be accomplished, right? At that point, you know, it's really possible to learn from the moment. That's what this is all about. There's some, your koan is pointing to some aspect of the moment, this moment, or every moment, really. And we don't necessarily want the moment we're getting. But if we can just get beyond our projections, all kinds of wonderful things even present themselves. The answer to the koan is in the moment somewhere. You know, it's this is just a lesson that sesshin teaches over and over again. And you know, because we're confronting all the time the limits of our small self, we sort of have to make this discovery at some point in 5 to 7 days. You know, just you have to have a little glimpse of this. Last night, somebody came into Dokusan and was just talking about the fact that you know, the noise of the street, the noise of the cars. Yesterday was Memorial Day, of course, and all this is like a motorcycle town. And I think everybody in Lenoka Harbor owns a Harley Davidson, and they all take it out on the road. This is like a beach community, so everybody has their noisy car, their noisy motorcycle. And I must say, I've practiced in places that are very quiet, you know, like so quiet all you hear is the wind. And this is a very different kind of place to practice in, because it's not at all like that. You know, today we had a survey of all the different sirens in town. You know? Maybe you appreciated it. It's like, I didn't know there were that many different kinds of sirens, you know. And some I'd never heard before. And maybe we had a car crash or a fire, we had police, fire engine, some emergency services, and a couple weird ones. I have no idea. And, you could say, oh, this is, you know, I would like to be up on a mountaintop where it's quiet. You know, there are places that are just extraordinarily quiet. It's possible to say, well, this is no good. You know, I can't really concentrate. This person came in last night into Dokusan. He said, you know, I think the noise of the cars really helps me. And I just thought, oh, that's so true. You know, it's absolutely the case, you know, that all of this noise is helping you, you know, to deepen your practice. It's really the case that even if we were far from roads and everything, there's so many birds out there, you know. I went to a session once that was in a very remote place. And after the session, I was talking to somebody about how his practice went, and he actually said, you know, those bird sounds were just driving me crazy. You know, it just was never quiet here. And I don't know what his idea of quiet was, but, you know, the difference between, like, a beautiful bird song and the siren of a car is just our imagination. Right, it's just that we value one over the other. You know, waves crashing on a shore is something we conventionally think of as peaceful. Right, so if we were sitting in a zendo right next to the ocean and you could hear waves every so often, it might actually drive you crazy after a while. Probably most people would think that's very peaceful. And cars going by, that's not what we necessarily think of as peaceful sound. But neither sound is really peaceful or not, you know. They're just sounds, you know. And we value them, we assign them value, depending on our cultural orientation. But that's not reality, that's the watcher consciousness, right? You know, at some point, they're just sounds. And actually, being aware of sounds is inescapable and not at all problem. You know, so when you're sitting on your cushion, if you hear birds singing and it bothers you, please go back to mushin. But sooner or later, you're going to become aware of birds singing again, or you're going to become aware of the sirens or the road noise. And you can push yourself back into mushin again. You should. But the interesting thing is actually being aware of bird sounds or the sounds of cars, that's very good for your practice, you know, as opposed to thinking, right? In other words, all of these sounds actually kind of keep people from losing themselves in the watcher consciousness. You know, it's actually helpful to people not to be absorbed in thought. Sometimes in a very quiet environment, people just sit there and ruminate, you know, and they just have these intense conversations in their head, and actually, that's a much more difficult situation. This, by the way, is why Zen temples are really not that quiet either. Like in a conventional temple, there's a guy at the beginning of every sit called the Jiki Jitsu. There's a couple of officers, actually. But they get up and they carry a stick up and down the aisles. So, you know, you start your sit and then there's somebody going up and down the aisle, and it's kind of, you have to really concentrate not to be aware of this person who's watching to make sure nobody moves. And of course that's one of the things that goes on almost the whole sit, you know, so you can hear somebody walking by, In many temples, you can hear people going into Dokusan, you know, this sort of thing. There's always like something going on, you know. And of course, when people are patrolling the aisles with their stick, they're hitting people too. So, you know, you're sitting in your on your cushion and you're trying to concentrate, and then you hear this, you know, and people are getting smacked with the stick and so on. And you could say, well, this is not very quiet. You know? So even in the Zen temple, they're doing things to prevent people from thinking too much, you know, to get them out of watcher consciousness and get them in the moment. But we don't always want to be in the moment, because it's not the moment we like. It's not the moment we wish we were having. But very often, the moment is holding the answer to the koan. Always, you know, there's something about this moment. Now, it may not be the obvious thing about the moment, right? You know, there might be something very obvious about this moment, and indeed that's not the answer to the koan. Somewhere in the moment, your mind has to be very still and very empty. You know, you have to have a very empty mind, very still mind, very, very focused. Something is going to turn up, you know. So a lot of Zen practice is just getting quiet. And quiet has nothing to do with birds singing or road noise. It has to do with your own state of mind. So you know, it can be very noisy outside, and you can be very still and quiet in your own awareness. In fact, those two things can go together. It's like the more crazy it is, the quieter you have to become. So you just become very still, very still, very still. Your mind becomes very empty, very empty, empty, empty. And then you can notice something. It's really remarkable. And you just stay in that state long enough, and you're going to stumble into it. And last night, people were giving such great answers. I mean, some people are working with new koans and gave really good answers. So, you know, a lot of Zen practice, I like this koan. Feiyan asked Elder Zhao, "Did you come by boat or land?" And this is like a Zen question, right? Could be. Zhao said, by boat. That's an interesting answer. Did you come by boat or land? See, is it sort of, is it this or that? But maybe Zhao really came by boat, you know? So, did you come by boat or land? That sounds like a question about discriminating mind. Is it boat? Is it water or land? See, it's like asking this person to fall into discriminating mind. And Zhao says, by boat. So it sounds like he's using discriminating mind. And then Feiyan said, where is the boat? See, and Zhao says, well, the boat's on the river. So, you know, it's hard to know. The next question, after Zhao had withdrawn, Feiyan turned and asked the monk, says, was that guy awake or not? See, it's hard to tell. It's like, he's just in the moment. You know, he's not. Feiyan asked him a question. How did you get here? I took a boat. Where is the boat? Well, it's on the water. Right? The boat's on the river, of course. It's like he's not trying to be or do anything special. He's not trying for any remarkable insight. He's just going along with the moment, going along. He's not trying to impress Feiyan. So it's just, he's not trying to make a Zen answer. He's just commenting on the character of the moment. See, this Joshu was like this. Joshu had this tremendous simplicity, right? Just the simplicity of somebody who's, you know, to get rid of enough, I'm not there yet, but I know from experience that if you get rid of some of your obstacles, you know, eventually, you know, there's just nothing that can throw you. And, you know, you're not worried about anything, and you're just in the moment. And it's just a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, Joshu practiced for 100 years. I don't know when he became like that, but we just keep we just keep polishing, right? Cultivating the self. There's always some part of ourselves that says no to some aspect of the moment, and so then we have to work on that. It's like polishing. And at some point, it doesn't bother us anymore. And then usually we're in the moment and the answer can present itself. And we might have to go through this a million times. I mean, you know, somebody said to me in Sesshin the other day, you know, it seems like I start out every Sesshin the same way with these negative thoughts. And I felt so happy to hear somebody say that. It's like, well, that's just great to have that kind of clarity about your practice, you know. And seeing one's habitual behavior is just great. You know, that's wonderful to see it, you know, for what it is. You know, these thoughts are not real. This is just karma. That's real progress. And of course you could say, well, I wish I didn't have to go through this at every Sesshin, but it takes a while, you know, to clear away these obstacles. But eventually it's possible just to be really simple. You know, and let's face it, I think everybody here is capable of much greater simplicity than when you started. I mean, that's part of why everybody winds up so happy at some point, you know, in Sesshin. Because, you know, it really becomes possible to be just simple. It just being in the moment, you know. And the moment's an interesting place to be. It's not what we might think, you know. But Zen is all about cultivating this extraordinary simplicity, as you all know. Fan's Bodur Land, you know. Fan asked Elder Zhao, did you come by Bodur Land? It's like, if he were a less advanced student, he'd try to give a Zen answer like, going. Did you come by Bodur Land? Going. That would be more of a Zen answer. I'm not going to fall into this Bodur Land thing, just going. And Zhao said, I came by boat. So then Fan thinks, gee, this guy could be awake and he could be just caught in ordinary consciousness. So then he says, well, where's the boat? And Zhao could have gone, hats! Like, you know, something like that. Something, oh, no! Because the boat's on the river. See? So simple. It's beautiful. After Zhao had withdrawn, Fan turned and asked a monk standing by, tell me, did that monk have eyes or not? Now, it doesn't mean Fan doesn't know. It means the monk probably didn't know. You know, so Fan's kind of maybe asking, trying to help the monk wake up. Saying, was that guy just an idiot? Or was he really in the moment? You know? And he was really in the moment. Like Zhaoxu. Like Zhaozhou. Joshi. I still haven't pronounced that properly. Yvette told me that, and I said, Zhaozhou. I said, Zhaozhou. She said, that's totally wrong. It's Zhaozhou. Verse, water doesn't wash water. See, it's all water. Gold isn't changed for gold, it's all gold. We're like trying to wash off the water, right, all the time. Find a horse without knowing its color. Enjoy the lute without the strings. That's a person who no longer has obstacles. Tying knots, drawing trigrams. This is like watcher consciousness, right? When there are such things, completely lost is the pure mind of the original man, original person. When we're trying to, the proper way to practice is to clear away obstacles and then observe the moment. When we're trying to find an answer, or trying to have enlightenment or something like that, trying to learn a lesson, trying to come away with some kind of an insight, then we're a million miles from it. See, there's always this temptation to want to have a lesson. Ah, the lesson is, I see now that I should do this, or, you know, but an insight. That's a totally, that's just not it. That's not the path. Just be with the moment and see where it takes you, and then report on where it takes you. That's all you have to do. It's so simple. So everybody's doing a wonderful job. It's a great pleasure to practice with you. And I'm so glad you had the opportunity and the desire to do these extra days, which I think make a huge difference. The more you practice, early on, as I say, it's not that important at first. And indeed, many people shouldn't do 7 days for a while because they're just not ready. But if you are ready, it's like this real, you can get very, very deep in those additional days. It's really this wonderful opportunity to deepen your practice. So I thank you for taking such good care of your true selves. And let's just go down the river together. Let's just go down the river and see where it takes us, okay?